Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for your family, and will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media groups or to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen or to watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote, and I've been trying to start many of our shows off with these. This one is not from the journal, but it's by Erik Erikson. It says, "Life doesn't make any sense without interdependence. We need each other. And the sooner we learn that, the better for all of us." Now, that is a quote that really does apply to all of us. And I'm going to add something. And if you agree, please share it with someone that you can, especially those who you may have lost touch with because you have different beliefs. Now, I'll put it on the Answers for the Family Facebook page for those of you that prefer to share that way. This one goes, "Anyone or any group that promotes hate or divisiveness is not looking out for you. Look not at those they tell you to hate. Look at those who tell us to hate and ask why they would choose to spread poison rather than love, kindness, and spirited debate." And that one, folks, is by me. So with that said, our topic today is also the title of our guest's new book, On the Loving End of Crazy, Finding Hope and Help to Face Your Loved One's Crippling Anxiety and Depression. And I believe that our guest's story will resonate with many people who feel helpless and don't know where to get the help they need. Our guest, Faith McDonald, is an author and currently an assistant teaching professor at Penn State University, where she shares communication and writing principles with students. She likes to write stories that encourage, entertain, connect, and help people learn. Now, Faith has written for many magazines and newspapers. One of her favorite articles, "I Just Want to Be Happy," was published in Today's Christian Women magazine and voted reader's favorite. Now, for many years, she wrote a continuing column in newspapers about family life, which evolved into a popular blog. She hopes and prays that her family story of a young adult son's struggle with anxiety and chronic depression will help others who are in the same place as they navigate the challenges of loving someone struggling with mental illness. Faith, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure, and it's a subject that I really believe that we need to talk about more. We need to dissolve some of the stigmas and things that are out there, and I know that one of the things that you talk about in your book is the fact that we're not alone. So if we could start, can you give us some of the statistics that shows that as we go through these things, we really aren't alone?
Yeah. Well, in 2016, Penn State University did a nationwide survey of college students. And some of the results were that of that survey were, you know, not perplexing. They were disheartening. At least 30% of college students at that time said they suffered from anxiety or depression so bad that they couldn't get out of bed, that it was interfering with their lives. And that was before COVID-19 and all the social distancing. I teach a business communications class at Penn State. And last spring, I was teaching students on how to engage in difficult conversations. And I said, you know, via Zoom, so what's a difficult conversation you'd like to know how to engage in? And I was thinking that they would say something like, oh, how to negotiate a raise, or how to, you know, talk to a team member about participating more wholeheartedly. And overwhelmingly, the student said, I need to know how to ask for mental health help. And, you know, that's what, 3 years after, we found that 30% of students were affected by anxiety and depression, now even more so.
Yeah, and I think what compounds that is the fact that you're talking about college students, many of which are away from home for their very first time. And, you know, so that if something like this starts to happen and they're at home, I think many people or many young people are more comfortable. They can turn to their parents. But I think when they've gone away like this, I think it's much more difficult for them to turn to their parents. And, you know, so I absolutely agree. They need to have places that they can turn to and people they can talk to be able to help with these problems. So now with that said, now let's talk a little bit about the feelings of helplessness that you went through, so much so that you felt that you should write a book about it and share it with other people.
Well, our story kind of started when our oldest son was a freshman in college, and he began to display habits that are mostly things related to substance abuse. And also he began to get in trouble with the police. And this was just really perplexing for us. I think many parents, you finally feel like we've gotten our kid to college, you know, they'll sail on to adulthood from here. And that didn't happen for us. And it's kind of a hard thing to admit or to say, wow, I really need help with, until I began to investigate how many people are affected by this. I felt lonely. I felt just embarrassed to say, wow, my kid's at college. Instead of succeeding, he's failing out, and we're getting calls from the police.
Now, see, that brings up a good point, because as we started, we're talking about what it is that the young person that's going through, but there's this other side of it that you just touched on, and that is what the parents are going through. And let's talk a little bit about what you think that some of the best ways that the parents can get the help that they need so that they can reach out and do so without embarrassment to help their child.
Yeah. I think the first thing, and it took me a long time to learn, you have to speak up, you know, you have to ask for help. You have to look avidly for help. It's not easy once you decide that you need help to find that help. You have to persevere in, you know, finding a counselor, or finding a support group, or although there's help available, but it's hard to find. Especially, you know, now that we're so socially distanced.
Yeah, that's really a good point, is that, you know, I think that many of the schools, you know, that are set up to be able to, you know, to meet with young people, I think it makes it even more difficult now that they can't just go to class and then choose to go to that other office that they might see a counselor, to have to now, I guess it's, you know, they're going to have to set it up like we're doing, set it up through Zoom, you know, and still try to feel comfortable talking to someone when you're not really in the same room.
Yeah. And Zoom has so many difficulties associated with developing a feeling of a rapport, you know, share feeling the warmth that two people need to feel so that they can say, hey, my life isn't going very well right now. So I would say all the difficulties that were evident in 2016 are magnified now.
So, you know, we talked again about the fact that there is a, you know, that there's a stigma of sorts, you know, that is out there. And so I was looking for other things that would touch on that. And I came across another quote that I want to share. And this is by Lisa Oliveira. And it says, just because no one else can heal or do your inner work for you doesn't mean you can, should, or need to do it alone. Yeah. And I came across that, and after reading your book and going through this, I thought that fits so well with the message that you're trying to get across to people.
Yeah, I really don't think that we can do it alone. You know, probably that's one of the ways I've changed over our experience with our son's illness is that I learned. I'm kind of a, you know, more of an introvert. I kind of like to be alone. But I think until you're willing to share and willing to get some perspective, you really can't heal alone.
Well, I mean, how did you get over the feeling of embarrassment in these situations? You know, what did you have to do to fight through it? And, you know, was it something that, again, you and your husband did together? How did you make the changes necessary to get the help needed?
For me, we were in a time of real crisis, lots of conflict at home. We had not really come to an understanding of like this mental health problem that our son faced was a disease. We still kept thinking, well, he's making these choices. You know, he's doing these really bad things like getting in trouble with the police or things that maybe weren't so bad, but unhealthy, you know, staying in bed in a dark room all day. And we were having a lot of conflict at home about that as a family. And one day I was at work and my husband telephoned me during a break between my classes and said, you know, I've just had the conflict. It's too much conflict. I've asked Matt to leave home. I've told him to pack his bags. And I was really upset because I didn't agree with that course of action, but I was at work and I thought, oh, what am I going to do? I went into a class at that time I was teaching a freshman English class, and I started to start class. And instead of talking about writing, I just burst into tears. And I thought, okay, this is embarrassing. Ran to the restroom, you know, washed my face, came back into class. And I said, well, we're going to pretend for the next 50 minutes that writing is important, more important than what's going on for me now. And the kids were adorable. They, one of them said, oh, you have to tell us what's going on. And I was like, oh, I do. And I thought, okay. And so I shared with this classroom of 24 college students, you know, some of the conflict that was happening with my family and that my husband had just kicked our son out of the home. And those kids were amazing. They rallied around me. They told stories of some of them. Oh, I was kicked out of home and I stayed away 2 weeks, but then I came back. And while I was gone, you know, this is what I did. And they were all like, it's going to work out. They're going to work their conflict out. You're going to be fine. And it went from me feeling like, oh, I have to hide this terrible thing that's going on in my family to, wow, when I share, I get support. I didn't get judged. I didn't get, you know, people talking bad about me or disparaging me. They were all there to support me. And who would think a class of 24 college students, but that semester, you know, every time I came to class, they'd say, well, how's it going? You know, what's your son doing? How are you doing? And it was a real turning point for me in terms of thinking about, wow, if I share my problems, I'm likely to get support, not stigmatized or not somebody judging me.
I think you bring up a great point, you know, obviously about sharing, but there's another point that I was getting out of this too, and that is we're sharing it with multiple generations. You know, so that it isn't just a bunch of people in this case, the parents' generation, sitting around and talking about just it from a parent's perspective. You are getting it from your son's generation and from his age group's perspective. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that the way you phrased that. But as you were talking about that, I thought, yeah, they had a really different perspective on it than I as a parent had. It was just for them as part of the learning experience, you know?
And you mentioned early on that a lot of the issues were drug related, and you know, and many of the experts will say that you know, that oftentimes doing those drugs is just to mask, you know, the mental health issues. And in regards to the different generations, I did a show one time from a drug and alcohol rehab program in another state that dealt with minors. And anyway, we had it all set up. We had all the proper paperwork and everything done that allowed us to be able to do this. But one of my favorite answers, there was a grandmother that called in that said that she had taken over custody of her grandchild, you know, to be able to help because the parents weren't able to do anything. And she just wanted to ask the question about, in regards to drugs, she said she thought that he was doing really well. And then she was in his room one time, and she found drugs, and she asked him, you know, what is this? You know, why do you have this there? And he said, well, it's not mine. It's, you know, one of my friends left it. And so I didn't say a word. I just turned it to the young people that were in treatment and said, what would you tell this woman? And this one boy spoke up and he said, ma'am, we lie. And then when you... And she said, and then when you call us on it, we're going to lie again. We're going to double down. We're going to lie. And if you found it in his room, he's doing it. And you need to address it that way. And I just thought, you know, there was nothing that I could have said or any other adult could have said that would have had more impact than having someone, another 15-year-old or so, to make those statements. So that's why I was kind of focused in on the generational part, because I think it has huge benefits when it can come together that way.
Yeah.
So now one of the other things that you mention in the book is, you know, you talk about the fact that there's so much to worry about. You're not only worrying about, you know, obviously about your son, but you were worried about your family falling apart. How did you deal with that? And share a little bit about, you know, what you've put in the book that I know about, but, you know, the things that not only you had to deal with, but how you turned that around to get through it.
Well, prayer was the main thing. You know, prayer and a commitment to family. I would have to say that our family was in so much conflict. It wasn't a lot of evidence of love between my husband and I would have to say. And I think God brought us to a place where my husband finally recognized that Matt faces a disease, that this isn't a choice. And there are some choices involved because he did use substances to cope with his anxiety and depression, and that compounded everything.
Go ahead.
Well, just definitely for us, prayer and a commitment to a relationship that we were going to try and make work, even though it wasn't working at the time. But just because it wasn't working at the time didn't mean we couldn't learn tools that helped it get better.
So, and when you're talking about relationship, you're now talking about your relationship with your husband, the stress of this spilled over to the point that it was making it very difficult on both of you?
It was very difficult. Yeah, because we both, and I think it happens often, we both had different ideas about, you know, how are we going to handle this? How are we going to react to our son who's not growing up in the way that we anticipated?
So you also mentioned in the book in regards to some of your church friends and pastors and sort of feeling misunderstood in regards to how some of them were trying to give their level of help. Talk a little bit about that and what that evolved into.
Yeah, well, anytime you have a situation, you'll find people who give advice, right, based on their own experience. And if you haven't experienced a family member with mental illness, the advice is very different. Like if somebody's making a choice to act in one way, then sure, it makes sense to let them suffer the consequences of their actions. If somebody has an underlying mental illness that's not allowing them to make good decisions, then it's kind of up to the healthy person to help them get to the resources that they need so they can get to a place to make healthier decisions. And now I forget your question. Sorry.
You're fine. That was great because it's, you know, I tied it a little bit more to your church friends and pastors, but essentially you're talking about it as a whole, which is fine. That is also part of the overall question.
Yeah. Well, I think people in churches make value judgments, you know, moral. We think of, say, substance abuse as a moral thing. And I've come to view it more as an illness thing. Do you know, I mean, people still have to get to the point where they're going to make a decision like, this is not healthy for my life. But I don't know. I don't know how much looking back that the judgment resided in myself or if it really was in the people who are looking at me thinking, well, she's not doing a very good job parenting because her kid's name is in the newspaper for, you know, yet another fight when he was intoxicated, or one time our son broke into a house when he was intoxicated. And that kind of stuff is, you know, pretty embarrassing, especially we live in a small town. And you feel judged. But in retrospect, from this position, I don't know if it was my own self judging me or if it really was people's looking at that saying, oh wow, things aren't going very well for them, are they?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like it might have been a little bit of both, but you know what, what eventually did you start to find comfort in, you know, as far as, because I think that there are people out there. It's interesting, I was just thinking about an article that I wrote many years ago called Destiny, and I had referred a family to an educational consultant because they were asking me, their son had very, very high IQ and was using illegal substances, but it was more of a mask. You know, it wasn't an addiction situation. And so I had referred them to an educational consultant that specializes in that, and they recommended a program that would fit very well for that young person. And a neighbor told them about a story about their son who had been through multiple programs and how a particular program finally worked, you know, and they were excited about the fact that that program worked. And so they called us and the ed consultant and said, we've decided to go a different direction. And they sent their son to this other program where the other boy went to. And it's a very, very sad story because the boy staged an escape and a bunch of kids took off and there was a car accident and people were hurt. And all of these things happened from the standpoint of where they chose to get the input of information. Where there are professionals out there, there are people who can help. They know how to steer us in the right direction, and yet there are other neighbors and so on that might have input, but that doesn't necessarily mean. I mean, it may mean that they mean really well, you know, and so it doesn't make them a bad person. They mean really well, but it doesn't mean it's the right choice. So so I think that, you know, when you talk about getting information and people that, you know, that you know, you feel like maybe they're blaming or all of these different things, I think when we start working with people who are more focused on this or within the same industry, I think there's less judging and more focusing on how can I be of service.
Yeah, and I think society seems to be more understanding, less stigmatizing of mental illness. Mm-hmm. But it's still hard to say, you know, my son struggles with depression. That's so intense, you know, it interferes with his work life. That's
well, how's he doing now?
It's been a hard year for him, you know, with COVID-19 here in Pennsylvania. We were quarantined or whatever, I don't know, nothing was going on for about 6 weeks. He didn't work for about 6 weeks, and that was really hard for him. And now we're back to, you know, churches via Zoom. He helps with the youth group at our church. That's via Zoom. And Zoom is just not a warm, rich medium. So I think that people like my son who struggle with depression are having a hard time.
Well, and again, as we've, the focus of this whole thing has been, he's not alone. Now, we're going to take a break, but for everybody out there, please stay with us because we're going to talk a little bit more about this subject, and know that if there's somebody that you know as we take this break and you're going, oh man, I know such and such that is going through the same thing, feel free to contact them, have them go ahead and join us. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that is legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. With me is Faith McDonald, and her book is On the Loving End of Crazy, Finding Hope and Help to Face Your Loved One's Crippling Anxiety and Depression. Now, we have a couple of listener questions that have come in, and again, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to do this. Now, this first one reads, my younger brother began drinking and doing drugs in high school. He is so bright, good-looking, and entirely too good at manipulating people around him, most of all our parents. Now, in his first year of college, he is already having problems with his courses because of the alcohol and the pills he takes, which I believe he does to mask some undiagnosed mental health issues. Our father keeps saying that he just needs time to figure things out. I think I can convince my mother to read your book as she, unlike my father, appears to see what is happening. Would your book help us open up my father's eyes? That's from Ben in Los Angeles.
Hi, Ben. Thank you for the question. My hope is that my book will help people feel not alone in their struggle and that they will find ways to feel hope. You're definitely in a tough position, but I think... I applaud you for thinking about ways to get this message through to your parents and saying again, you know, to your brother, pointing that maybe can you talk to your brother too and say, I've noticed that, you know, and whatever you've noticed, and I care about you, and I believe that this behavior could negatively impact you and our family in the following ways. And then make up your mind. What I do with Matt, sometimes I have to have conversations with him about, you know, various aspects of the things we face due to his illness. I feel like the healthy person can do is just say, I'm going to have this conversation again and again and again until we have a breakthrough. And that's not easy to do, but I do think it's reality. It's kind of like I have to talk to my students about not using their cell phones in class, you know, and I say, I've noticed your cell phones interfering with class. And I just make up my mind, I'm going to do that again and again and again until the semester's over in that case. But when you love someone, you know, you look for various ways to present the options of the way or the how their behavior is affecting you.
Mm-hmm. Now we have another one, and this one reads, I am so thankful you wrote this book so we can dissolve the stigma that keeps so many families from asking for help. How do you see parents getting over what many feel is embarrassment in these situations? And that's from Ron in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hi, Ron. I think, you know, we just have to keep speaking up. And it's hard to say, you know, I'm depressed, or I'm the mother of a kid who's depressed, who's anxious, who my son was in the hospital for 45 days because he was suicidal. And it's not easy to say, but the more I say it, the more I find people who support me, or now that we're in a healthier place, people that I'm able to support. And so I think that the more we talk about it, the more the stigma will fade.
Okay. Makes sense.
I mean, so, you know, that's been my experience. That's.
Well, and that's one of the things too. And that's the other thing for those that, you know, in regards to getting the book is, you know, it's not written as an instruction manual. Okay. I mean, it's written from the heart of a parent saying, you know, this is what we went through and you're not alone. And that's the feeling I got. And was that your goal?
Yes. And that's my main goal. You're not alone. There's hope. And then throughout the book, I mentioned the things that I learned that helped me. You know, I learned, well, I don't have to be a victim in this situation. In fact, it's really up to me to take charge of my life and find a way to have a life, you know, that I can thrive in. And here's how I'm going to do it. I ended up seeing a counselor for a couple of years, which was really, really helpful to me. I learned to become more skilled at conversations with my son.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it sounds like with your husband as well.
Yes. And that was, you know, that wasn't easy to, I think for the person who's more introverted, who doesn't explode in anger, say, it's easy to say, well, it's his fault because he's exploding all the time. But what I realized is, oh, I have a contribution that I'm making here too. What's my contribution? Oh, I need to offer my perspective in a way that he'll hear me. So looking for options for having conversations that say, you know, have you thought about this? Or this is my perspective. I think, when you love someone who struggles with mental illness, it's really easy to blame, either to blame yourself or to blame your spouse or somebody else. And until you get to the place where you're going to move beyond blame, you know, whatever that takes, forgive yourself, forgive your spouse, and find a way to address this problem in a productive way, it won't get any better. Blame doesn't help anyone do anything.
And you're talking about blaming yourself, blaming your spouse. But there's another aspect, and I know you touch on it in the book, which is how can a parent deal with the anger that they may feel towards the child or their loved one themselves?
Yeah, that's a really good question and really good, you have to grapple with that too. And in our situation, you know, Matt has come to a point where he has apologized for some of the things that he did when he was under the influence of alcohol and substances. And he's thanked us for supporting him. But when you're in the crisis of this person is blaming you, yelling at you, spewing anger at you, it's hard to see like, oh, this is a disease. This person is acting in an unhealthy way. I can't respond defensively or the way, you know, I can't lash out at them. I mean, you can lash out at them. You feel like it, but that probably doesn't bring you to the place of health. So if you're in a situation and somebody has mental illness that's affecting it or substance abuse, get counseling yourself. I was very resistant to counseling. I kept thinking, well, I'm the healthy one here. I'm still going to work every day. I'm, you know, maintaining a life. I'm healthy. And actually my niece and my daughter talked me into seeing a counselor. And I'm not proud. I mean, I'm not proud to say I resisted it for a long time. And then once I said, okay, I'm going to do this and did the work, which it's really hard work to find a good counselor. It's worth it, but it's really hard work. In our area, you know, there are not a lot of counselors. I got a list of counselors. I went down through it. I tried a couple of them. I finally found a counselor who was a good match for me. And that helped me get healthy in places where I would have to say, you know, everybody has blind spots too, right?
Well, and it's like they say on an airplane, first thing you got to do is put your own mask on first.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so you were mentioning about you being resistant. What about your husband? Because I think in many of these situations within our generation, I have found that it is more so the male or the father that is more resistant to the therapy.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, that's kind of been one of those conversations I've had with my husband over the years. You know, you could try counseling. He finally is in counseling, but he told me last week, he's like, yeah, well, I don't think she really helped me. And I'm like, well, what do you mean she didn't really help you? You know, and then we talked about, I don't know, people go into counseling too with expectations that maybe aren't realistic, or we're going to fix my perspective in three short steps. Doesn't quite happen that way.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I ran into someone who I transported to a specialized program when they were about 14. And I ran into them about 10 years later, actually 12 years later, because they said they were 26. So 12 years later, I ran into them. And I have a basic rule that I don't approach them. I don't talk to them or anything. I let them, and they saw me, and they immediately came up to me, and they started talking about their life and everything. And so I said, well, I think that's great. I said, it sounds like, you know, the program was really good for you and stuff. And they said, no, I don't think it really taught me anything. But they proceeded to talk about the fact that, you know, they were engaged to get married. They have a great job. They have a great life, how happy they were. So they talked about all of these great things and yet said, I don't think the program actually did it. And I just smiled. There was no reason to let them think anything different. But I thought, okay, whatever makes it work for you.
Yeah. I know. It's different. Perspectives are funny, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I said, my husband he's seeking counseling right now because we're just, you know, the whole situation is complex. And I guess people in different times of their life get to where, oh, I'm going to deal with this. And part of it is our son's medication makes him very tired. So he sleeps a lot. And, you know, Steve said to me, he said, well, my counselor said, you know, that that medication that Matt's on, it makes him tired. So that's why he would sleep a lot, not because he's lazy. And I thought, well, that's one good thing you learned from that counselor. What's one more thing, maybe?
And so we've got another question, another listener question that has come in. And this one reads, I see so many parents and grandparents shouldering such heavy blame for their children who are, and they have in quotes, off the rails and addicted to drugs. One friend's grandson is actually wandering the streets of San Francisco and homeless. My friend and her daughter, and in parentheses, his mother, went to see him, and he said that he liked his life just as it is and refused any offerings of help or to go into any form of rehab program. She is so upset and very afraid that something will happen to him on the streets. Do you have any message of hope for them about this? And this is from Andrea in Connecticut.
Hi, Andrea. Yeah, that's a... my heart just breaks for people in situations like that. Prayer, for me, prayer. I was, praying desperately for my son for many, many years. And I think that's the only answer. Learning to have a life that you can be happy and that you feel like you're thriving is really hard when you're on the outside of, you know, your loved one is in circumstances like that. And for me, it's then, you know, I go to the Bible and pray, and I don't have any easy answers for, you know, that circumstance. It's heartbreaking.
Well, you mentioned that your son was kicked out for a time. Talk about how you dealt with that, how long he was out, and how you dealt with that, because obviously that sounds like something that you and your husband did not agree on.
Yeah. Well, the end of that story is I got home from work. I stayed at work that day till so late because I thought, well, I just don't even want to go home. And when I got home, my husband was asleep on the couch, and my son, who had been packing his backpack, had laid down and was asleep in his bedroom. And so he did not end up leaving that day. So that's not kind of anticlimactic, yeah. Right? But it's so hard because some kids, they leave home and they have the faculties that they can find someone to live with. My son actually now works with the homeless ministry in our community. Mm-hmm. And he spends time with homeless young men, which is just to my heart. You know, I think, wow, for years I worried that that's where he was going to be. But now he goes out of his way after work. We'll pick a homeless kid up and take him out to dinner. And I think, you know, our God is bigger and more concerned, and God loves us and loves our troubled kids. And that to me is comforting, but I know it's not easy when your kids are not doing well.
Now you mentioned obviously that he was at home when this was happening. I assume that prior to that he had been in college. How did it work? Because I've had parents say that part of their frustration is that step when they go from college back home, which to the parent is a failure in the sense that they have, quote, dropped out.
Yeah. Matt tried college 3 times and dropped out 3 times. And so it is hard. I think that in our culture, we interpret people coming back home to live as a failure. I think we better get over that because I think it's going to happen to a lot more people because of coronavirus and all the economic implications. Um, I think for me, it was the figuring out that, oh, my plan, my expectations aren't the only expectations that will result in us having a family life that we're bonded together by love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I work at a college. I, of course, thought that college was in, you know, was something all of my children would do. I had to really change that expectation. My son works as a carpenter now. And, you know, I've learned to value that skill.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a great point, because I think we actually need to have a lot more trade schools. We need to have, you know, a lot of other things set up, because college isn't for everybody. And so I completely agree with that. You know, as you were saying that, and I've got another quote that I'd like to share with everybody, because I think it really fits the point right now. And this one reads, what mental health needs is more sunlight, more candor, and more unashamed conversation. And that's by the actress Glenn Close. And I think that really fits. And what you've done with writing this book is you've shined a light on it. And that is what she's saying. It needs more sunlight. It needs more candor. And you talk about being able to get through things and approach it in an unashamed fashion. So when I saw that, I thought it fit perfectly for what you've done to help other people that may be dealing with a similar situation. So for that, I want to thank you very much. And really just want to honor what you've done. And it's interesting, because you said in the very beginning, you're more of an introvert. So it probably was even more difficult for you than it might be for a lot of people, you know, to not only write a book about it, then go on things like this, Zoom calls and things like that, to talk about it. So I really feel the fact that you have a big heart about this. And with what your son is doing and going out and helping other people, I think there is a big heart there as well. So again, thank you.
Thank you. I did want to say too, when you were, I was thinking about, somebody asked about what I did, and I said prayer. Also, I know you have a focus on a gratitude journal. And very often throughout these times, I've done like a 21-day gratitude challenge where I think, well, everything in my life is messed up right now, but I'm going to be thankful for I can see, or I have a meal, and really worked through being grateful in the moment, which is another tool that benefits anyone who's going through a hard time.
Well, that's great. And so for everybody out there, again, if you go to our website, we have, and it happens to also be a 21-day journal. So it is free for you to download. And it is just something that we know that if more people are focused on gratitude, that we are all going to be happier.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Faith, thank you so much. So again, for everybody out there, the book is On the Loving End of Crazy, Finding Hope and Help to Face Your Loved One's Crippling Anxiety and Depression. Is there a website or anything else you would like to give anybody if they would like to reach out?
Yes, the book is available on Amazon. I usually forget to say that. And okay. I have a website, faithmcdonald.com. And I blog occasionally on, you know, the complications, the challenges of loving someone who's struggling with mental illness. So anybody's welcome to stop by there, and you can email me too. I love hearing from readers.
Well, great. Well, Faith, again, thank you so much. And so for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we're going to be joined by Claudia M. Gold, MD, the author of The Power of Discord, The Secret to Building Successful Relationships. Now, and in this interview, Dr. Gold's going to share how we have been led to believe that perfect harmony is the defining characteristic of a healthy relationship. But the truth is that human interactions are messy, complicated, and confusing. Most importantly, not only is discord okay, it is also actually crucial to our social and emotional development. And please, you get a chance, visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to our show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, YouTube, if you want to get a video rather than audio, Spreaker, and SoundCloud. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. And for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.